Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the China Shop, the home of the Band of Traders. I'm Kyle, and usually your host, but today we've got another installment of the Humanity of Trading, which means that Cleo is going to be in the driver's seat while I hover my foot over the brakes. Today's volunteer is no stranger to the show, our head of R&D, Purdue. Welcome back, dude.
Thank you.
Let's see. Before we get into the conversation today, let's get some business stuff taken care of. Please, please, please feel free to reach out with any suggestions, corrections, or questions for future guests. You can do that via email at bandoftraders@gmail.com. You can join our free Discord server. You can DM one of us on Twitter. We're at financialinept1. All those links will be in the episode description so you can peruse them at your own convenience. Now that we got that out of the way, let's check in with Cleo and Purdue and see where tonight's discussion is going to take us.
Yay. I'm really excited because I've wanted to ask Purdue some things for, I think, months, actually, since I've been a part of the trading room. Because, yeah, Purdue, you come in to the trading room sometimes. You sort of like fly in these moments and you just add something that's so awesome, like something that maybe people aren't really tracking or like it's just clear that you know what you're doing. And I've wanted to ask you things for a couple months. So I'm excited. And I have like a list of questions. We'll see if we get to them or, you know, we go different directions or something. But I'm just excited to talk to you.
That's an amazing compliment. And I very much appreciate that.
I would second that.
And to see you too, because we haven't actually seen each other. We've only, you know, heard each other in the room.
All right. Well, why don't you kick things off and at least get one question answered?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one impression I have of you is that you've been doing this a while. And I even have the sense like you could potentially run your own trading room. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a guess. I don't know anything about you or your history. So I want to have a sense of who you are as a trader. And more specifically, I think actually just higher level, like I kind of want to know your stats, like not like, you know, P&L, but what can you tell us about your, I don't know, general weekly performance or something?
Well, that's a rabbit hole.
Good.
a little bit about my background is, yes, I was the stereotypical retail trader. I grew a $500 account into a $5,000 account. I grew that $5,000 account during the COVID crash into a $25,000 account past PDT.
Nice.
And if COVID never happened, I don't know how I would have done it. And if it wasn't for finding out about futures, I don't know how I'd have done it. But I'm also like the stereotypical retail trader that got bait and hooked into many different call rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And some very toxic call rooms where they trickle feed you information to try and just keep you in the room. To a point where I became another call room's basically right-hand person running the room for the main person. And was given the old bait and carrot little tangle of, hey, I'll share this with you if you just keep helping me, and then to have it ripped away. Which was my putting in perspective of like where I wanted to be as a trader. I never want to run a call room. I never want to run a room, period. I don't want to manage people. My purpose as a trader is to provide for my family and to be with my family.
Yeah.
And nowhere in that perspective is running a call room.
I'm actually surprised then that you actually help out as much as you do with us. I mean, you've been around the stuff that I've been doing for what, probably close to 2 years running now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really appreciate you taking another leap because.
Well, it's just enough to, you know, trading's lonely. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be involved and have a community. And the more people you have around you that can elevate or give you different perspectives is beneficial. And I don't want to disconnect from that altogether. But at the same point in time, I don't want to be the lead character.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where that goes.
Well, and I imagine this room, this trading room, is really actually different culturally than the one that you're talking about, right? There's no promises being made. There's no carrot for anything. It's just people coming together. And
yes.
Yeah. So I imagine that is more compelling to you.
Yeah. That is just it. It is where I have the freedom to come and go as I please. And I have the freedom to contribute when I can to the community. That's the biggest benefit to it all is just that is, when you have a call room, you're obligated. And I actually did have when I broke off from the other room, I did have, I wouldn't say it was a call room, but I did have it as an education room to basically bring up to speed a lot of the other people from that room that were being held back in information to say, hey, these are all the things you need to learn that he's going to drip feed you. Here it is. You know,
Was that Purdue's house? Was that the one or is it a different one?
Yeah, well, that's what started. That was originally, I think it was called Phi Trading, which is PHI, Phi Trading, was the original room. Yeah, and then eventually changed it to just Purdue's house. But yeah, that was the original idea, was that I just was trying to get other people in the room up to speed to benefit them and not being stuck in a room being drip-fed information, because that's what was happening was the person that I was involved in was feeding off of another bigger call room, and he created his own smaller call room that was actually giving them better information than the original room. And it was like this Ponzi scheme.
Wild.
It really was. It was legitimately a bigger call room with a smaller call room giving them more information than the original one. And it was like this Ponzi scheme. But it was just, I'm going to feed you. I actually found the book of my mentor, my original mentor. I found the book. I found the book that my mentor was basically teaching us off of was exact curriculum from this one book.
Oh, wow.
And it basically was all these patterns, and I could go back in time and look at his curriculum on how he's spoon feeding these things like once a month. And it was basically once a chapter.
Oh my gosh.
And it was 32 chapters. So, but yeah, it was just that. And it just was like, oh my God.
And it sounds like people wanted more faster. Like he was keeping yes. people there and like to like drip them information so they would stick around or something, not like actually tuning in. Okay, now you're ready for this next piece or something. Like you didn't, you, it was kind of sus in that way.
Yes. Yeah. And I was the one more faster. I want it now. I want,
yeah.
Neil. I'm an energized yeah. bunny. I can.
When learn. I get like a something in my head that I want to learn this thing, like I want to consume all of it. I want to do it all. And just yes. like all night session, like just nothing but looking at this one thing until I understand it.
That's exactly the way I do things, is that I will consume a lot of information and then go back and then go back and then go back. Mm-hmm. But I like to consume information that way.
Is that kind of a common theme among call rooms? Because I haven't spent too much time in them, but
in other call rooms,
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been lucky. I think that the people that I've surrounded myself with seem to have a genuine interest in trying to help people.
Yeah, me too. But there is this trope about traders, right? That there's gonna, I'm not surprised hearing that there's like a Ponzi scheme with traders. Like yeah. traders seem to kind of have a bad rap in a way for maybe good reasons, right? It seems like this band of traders, you know, podcast, but also the room with Vanta is kind of a, I don't know if it's a unicorn, but seems kind of more rare.
That's what we're going for.
It is that idea. I mean, I did go through the gamut for roughly 2 years, at least-ish, of call rooms. Mm-hmm. And I bounced around in the mall. And I was frankly looking for a solution and eventually realizing that I actually had the solution. It was just putting in the work.
Yeah.
You want to talk more about that? Like, what exactly were you looking for in those call rooms? Do you think?
Good question.
The magic bullet, the magic, that was mm-hmm. it. It was always the magic bullet. What do I not see that someone else sees? It was the magic formula. And a perfect example of that was actually played out today. Mm-hmm. You know, Mr. Banks talked about how he hates the market today.
Yeah.
And I actually was like, I liked this market today.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm. But that's the point. It's how one person's junk can be another person's treasure. That's what I was starting to hint at, was that it doesn't matter what someone else's perception of the market is or someone else's perception of your trading plan. It doesn't matter, as long as you can put the pieces together and have an expenses sheet and have a back testing strategy that works. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what everyone else thinks. And that's where I started. That was like the breaking point where I started putting those pieces together, was like when I started getting the back testing, Chris, who you interviewed,
yeah,
got me on the path of really getting serious about the back testing and the business models. But it was just that, like it was putting in the faith that I do know enough. There is no magic bullet. It's just putting in the time and figuring out what works for you. Mm-hmm.
And you said this thing at the beginning about you were a stereotypical retail trader and you grew your account yeah. from 500 to 5K or 5K to 25K. And that actually doesn't seem stereotypical to me, unless maybe it was just luck because it was the pandemic. It's, is that what you mean?
That's why.
It was luck then.
It was luck. It was timing of the market. I had such a small account, I couldn't go short.
The real
it
question
really was
is,
I mean I bought Roku, I think it was like $32 Roku when it was $32.
Nice.
And that's what blew it up to $500, and then I took some of that off and then I put half of it back into Roku, and then I bought some other stuff I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And let Roku just run, and Roku went to $100 within 6 months. So yeah, it was dumb luck and it was poor risk management.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like a dumb retail trader making it was just that start was completely dumb luck. And just to put it out there, I also I'm trying to retract. Is it 2023? Took a $35,000 account and lost $15,000 that account in 3 days.
3 days. God.
Right. That's the other side of that, right? That's the other side of the luck.
That yep. was the question I was going to ask.
Yeah,
what happened
yeah.
to that 25K account? Did you manage to hold on to it?
It was the risk management. It was the strategy. It was like, for example, is today. Like today, today I had a very good day, and today would normally be like a day I would lean into and just keep pushing. Now I've learned to, when I have these outlier big days, is that I sell and I go flat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, was that my exponential gains that I had was because of my poor risk management and not understanding that when you have an outlier big day like this, you should not lean into it and just back off.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like traders that are going off of luck are inevitably going to lose all their money at some point, like not too far down the line, actually.
Yeah. But don't you kind of have to go through that? Like if you... sooner or later it is going to happen. Like the flaws are going to get revealed. You almost have to go through like some sort of pain in order to like point out to yourself that, hey, I need to learn some shit here, because this is, there's potential here, but it's not quite as simple as I first thought it was going to be.
Totally.
There is nothing like trading that will teach you many life lessons.
A lot of humility.
Yeah. I heard someone say, maybe it was George. I talk about George every single podcast now or episode, but I think he said something like, we risk the most when we know the least.
Oh, wow, that's deep.
Yeah, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Wonder why.
Okay, can I come back to another thing that you said, Purdue, about like you want to support your family?
Yes.
So I'm also still interested in your stats, like as a trader, like I imagine you're consistently profitable. Do you have green days every day? Do you like, what's your average, or how, like what's your average week look like? And then also tying into like, I know that you do other work for money. I hear you talking about how you're going to go, you know, tend to some things for work. And do you want to get to the point where you have trading as your primary source of income to support your family, or is it always going to be a side hustle? So what's your general, like, yeah, stats and relationship to, yeah.
So my primary source of income is I own a landscape business in Kansas City, Missouri. And that is in a position where I'm trying to grow it to a point where I don't have to run day-to-day operations. And then eventually grow into the point where trading replaces my income from my landscape business. And that is my ultimate goal, is to eventually replace my landscape business income by trading.
Yeah.
And nice. Then eventually have, when that occurs, to have someone else replace my role within the company.
Great. How close are you, do you think, to that goal?
I'm hoping to achieve that this year.
Awesome.
Oh, yes. Wow. My win ratio right now is hovering somewhere between 55 to 65, depending on the month. I have a few funded accounts that I kind of push to tilt. I think of funded accounts as basically paper money. So I do push them to the nines, I guess.
The extremes.
Funded accounts, you mean like with a prop firm?
Yeah, so I have three funded accounts right now with Apex, for example, and let's say one of them is a $50,000 account. When I get to $53,000, I withdraw the maximum amount.
Amazing.
And then I keep doing that. The problem with that is that it pulls you down into that threshold where you basically have $600 of run room to where you're blowing it up. And the purpose of that account, those accounts, frankly, are to build up my cash account. And one of my cash accounts right now, that's an option account, is actually doubled over the last 3 months.
Yeah, you've been slinging some nice swings lately.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Posting them in the Discord too.
And that's my bigger perspective. So the way I'm looking at my trading right now is that I want to get to the point, and this is a conversation I've had with my wife, was that I wasn't responsible with my money when I blew it up in 2022. I want to replace that money now by proving that I have the skill and the risk requirement to get back to $35,000 in my cash account and then go forward with that cash account again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm basically proving it to myself really that I can handle that amount of responsibility and that amount of money and do it basically the hard way. I mean, if I feel like if I can do it with a prop account, it'll be so much easier with my actual cash account.
You would think, yeah.
And just a slight tangent here, I imagine most people listening to this know what a prop account is, but I actually have some family and friends listening to this and they have no idea what that is, I'm sure. And if you could just give us just a little explanation of what you're talking about.
So the prop accounts are like the down and dirty of the trading world. You basically pay a low entry fee and you get a theoretical cash value of a trading funds to play with. And you have basic requirements of, say, you have $50,000 to play with. You have a $3,000 profit goal and a $1,500 maximum daily loss limit.
Which is kind of annoying because it's really not a 50K account. It's actually
exactly
like a $1,500 account. You're trying to double it.
Exactly.
So you're paying some monthly fee to have access to all this capital, and then you trade with that capital and you have to reach certain goals, right? And then if you do, you get to actually extract that capital from
yes.
the platform.
At a profit split, typically.
Uh-huh, profit split.
And the worst part now is that's very much irritating me right now. For example, Apex Trading. I hope you're listening. I'm can't wait to switch.
Oh, yeah?
They changed their rules to where it's your daily win cannot exceed more than 30% of any other day.
Oh, your consistency goal.
The consistency goal. But my rub with this, and this is the problem with the industry, and this is why they're scum of the earth and they're just feeding off of waiting for you to blow up. I have, Kyle, you've seen it. Like yeah. that. I have a $100,000 account with them that's up $6,000 that has 300 to 400 trades in it.
Mm-hmm.
I have one outlier day, and I'm sorry, across two of their accounts, I was just on fire that day.
Yeah.
It wasn't one trade. It was like 30 trades in one day that I had a humongous damn day. And in that $100,000 account, I made $2,500. On the $50,000 account, I made $1,500. So they're outlier days, so I cannot withdraw now, even though I beat the requirements and I'm above all the requirements.
Wow.
Because one trading day is over 30% of all the other days, I can't withdraw my funds. What kind of crap is that? That's where
it's so wild.
The prop firms are the scum of the earth, and you have to understand what you're dealing with. It is what it is, and that's what you get for what you're dealing with. So right now, I'm trying to play the small game and just get $500 days. I have to basically have to get $500 days to withdraw my money now.
And then just mm-hmm. quit. Yep. Just stop.
Yeah.
So interesting.
So rather than investing in a trader, just having, and that's my, like, I don't have a problem with a prop firm saying, hey, no YOLOing in accounts. And, you know, if you have, let's say, a trade or two that makes 30%, 40%, whatever it is over your account. That makes sense. But when you have like a dozen trades throughout the day.
Yeah.
Right.
Clearly you're consistent.
Yeah.
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 Cause, and that's my, like my biggest struggle that I have, like Cleo, like you're very much into the psychology part of it. My biggest problem that I have is actually the psychology from my work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because my work draws me away, my attention, and I pull, basically, this is my bad habit, is that I pull my anger from an employee, from a customer, from whatever work condition I'm dealing with, and I blast it onto the market or blast it onto the screen and say, F you, I'm shorting this thing. You know, like, you know, right. I'm going to make the market go where I want it to go.
I'll show him.
Yes.
Does it work, though? It's, I mean, because you are generally successful. So when you have that energy, it actually doesn't work for you.
No, it does not work. That's how I go on tilt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So for a while, my father actually used to help pitch in, and he would give me Fridays off and basically help babysit the office while I'm away. And I'd be able to work and trade from home. It's also why I'm notorious, why on Fridays I kill it.
Yep.
Nice.
Because I don't have customers and employees and everything hitting me, and I can just be in my zone. And I can't wait for that opportunity.
That's amazing. I mean, the other side of that, though, too, is that it sounds like you're not blowing up when you have anger or frustration at your employees or customers. Like, you're bringing it elsewhere. You've got like an outlet, and maybe that hurts you financially, but you're not, sounds like, causing harm with people.
Yes.
So just want to highlight that, you know, you're bringing it elsewhere, which seems in a way like a healthy movement, even though it doesn't seem ideal for you to be taking out your anger and frustration with the markets.
probably be better to be taking it out on that weight set behind you.
Right.
Yeah. And that's actually what I've always been. I was always looking for different avenues to do that. I've always been an adrenaline junkie. I used to have a bass boat. I actually sold stupidly before COVID. But yeah, dirt bikes, street bikes, fast cars. I'm a pilot. If you can think about anything that goes fast, that's what I used to love, because there are very few things that give me that flow feeling, and it only happens when I go fast. And I've actually had that feeling a few times while trading.
You sound like a pilot. Like, you were one of the people in this very first episode series when I was like, yeah, you guys sound like a bunch of pilots. I was mostly thinking of you and Banks, actually, because you come in with this like clarity of something and it cuts something, and you've got like a comment about a observation of the market, and then you pop out. And it's so great. And hearing that you were a pilot, like, there's, I don't know, a feature of it that fits.
Yeah, that's my background, actually, though.
There's someone I was just recently talking to about this, and I asked him, like, what other occupations of people he's worked with has he seen, like, a higher than average success rate with? And one of the ones that he mentioned actually was pilots. And for him, the reason that he distilled it down to was that their ability to follow checklists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's all about the checklists.
And guess who we reinforced that?
Who's that?
Rich Friesen.
Ah, nice. Yes. George, too. George always talks about confirmation.
Yeah.
Have a little checklist.
Rich Friesen was when we did our thing with Rich, Kyle.
Yeah, yeah.
He, our private 101 with him, when as soon as he finalized a pilot, he just jumped all over that. It was stick it down. I don't care if you put a clipboard on your knee. Pretend, I don't care if you want to put a flight suit on, to get yourself in the trading mindset to put your clipboard on your knee, your trading plan on your knee, and go through your checklist.
After that, you told me about that after that day, and I think I ended up, I took a deck plate from the submarine that I served on 1 year that I still have, and I actually have it in front of my door here. So when I step on it, it makes the clink like a loose deck plate would on the submarine.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings me back into like a,
oh, that's so cool.
You know, we're on the mission, we're on patrol, it's time to go get the work done.
I love that.
For me, it's Avgas.
Avgas.
What's that one?
Avgas is aviation fuel. It's basically 110 octane low lead. And when you ever do a check flight in a private pilot aircraft, like a small Cessna, you basically have to dump the fuel tanks and to basically double check you don't have water in your fuel. And you have to check it with a little sight picture thing. And you dump on the tarmac. But that smell is
always... Seems like a waste.
It always is. And yeah, you're basically pouring gasoline. But that smell has always resonated with me when I'm flying.
Nice.
Oh, that's funny. It's funny the things that take you back, whether it be a sound, a smell. Like, I could go smell an old poopy suit that I have, old uniform, coveralls. Just look like you pooped yourself. That's why they call it that. But it's still got the smell of amine that kind of smells like stale Chinese food is the best way I'd describe it.
Well, I mean, submariner, that's a little different. I mean, being like jet A fuel being burned, I mean, like at any airport, that takes me away too. I mean,
yeah, you probably got more opportunities to experience it.
So I want to take us back also to this moment that you were talking about, like your biggest struggle in trading is integrating your work and trading and your frustration, and that comes out in your trading. Like, I appreciate you sharing that with us. It's very relatable. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you do with that. Like, have you seen any difference in yourself? Have you worked on it? What's your relationship to it these days? And is it different than it used to be? And what do you want for yourself? Like, is there something else possible? Like, if you could just speak more to this, because this is the thing that I think is most interesting. Like, what's in our way? And how do we deal with our, you know, what's humanity of frustration or whatever the thing is?
This is actually the biggest thing about trading. And this is, frankly, the scariest thing to me. Like, what would have happened to my life if I didn't find trading? Because there's so many personal development things that have happened over the last 5 years that I don't understand how I would have ever overcame them or worked through if it wasn't for trading.
Ooh, great.
Well, we got to have some examples, right?
I know. We got to talk about that, too. And I still want to keep this piece alive, but let's go there.
I went through... basically my existential like midlife crisis last year. Mm-hmm. I'm 43 years old and basically went through that process of my midlife crisis. I went to California for a few days and just visited my brothers by myself and kind of did like a personal reset. That's where I came to the realization, like, it's in my mindset. It's in my head. And Kyle, you guys know that, you know, that's where I came up with the phrase grind. Mm-hmm. It's going back to how I am. I'm not, in my opinion, especially talented at anything particular, but I'm very, very good at my work ethic and I'm very good at just keep going. And I just keep going at it until I eventually get it. But that's
dogged determination is the way I describe that.
Yeah. But it's like the, I always thought the whole mind, like my dad actually told me many, many times, I can't even count how many times my dad told me it's in your mind. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that stuff was foo-foo, you know? And when you really start paying attention to that narrator in your head and how you talk to yourself and what you say to yourself and all those things, like it does flipping add up. Like it's just, and that's where that mindset thing started coming into. So I've had that narration of that ticking clock going on in my head of where, you know, my daughters, my family is getting older. I'm getting older. I'm getting weaker. And I'm going to only have so much of a window where I can actually do so much. And that's where that ticking clock started really resonating in my head. And the really big turning point for me in my life and that midlife crisis was I'm living below my expectations. And no one put those expectations there but me. So that's where I was just like, fuck it. I need to just start pushing. That's where the gym came from. That's where my mental mindset came from, that I just need to like just push it as hard as I can. And if there's one thing that I want to have when I die, is just say,
I gave it my best.
I don't regret. I pushed it. Like, and it's just like if I'm on a street bike or a streetcar and just going fast on a track, whatever, if I am pushing it and I die, I don't care.
You're going full out.
Was going fast and I did the best I could. Mm-hmm. That's my point right now. And that's what all I want to focus on right now is just to try and go full out and do the best I can. And that's where my mindset is right now. It's not like with my landscape business, it's making some very radical changes. With my trading, it's making some radical changes. My work ethic, like I actually just recently stopped posting at 4 a.m. because I think people got tired of looking at my 4 a.m. watch in the morning. But
I like
I'm pushing to the point where I've actually been like, I am getting a little bit too far out there.
Oh, yeah? How but, so?
Yeah, I mean, just my body. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never been so sore, so tired. Matter of fact, last night I fell asleep on the couch. I didn't even get to dinner.
Hmm. Well, you're preparing for that tactical thing, right?
Yeah, I haven't committed to it yet, Kyle. Like I really want to do the tactical games. But again, it's like just another, I feel like that's a luxury that I don't have the attention span for.
You're going full out in these other ways.
Yeah, like it's,
longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
I would love to do tackle games. I just feel like that's a luxury that I can't focus my attention on right now when so many things are more important, especially trading and especially my landscape business, that I don't want to pull away from it.
That's not a priority. You know,
it, doesn't, yeah, it doesn't mean that I can't still focus on it and still push through it. And it doesn't mean that's something I can't do next year. I hate saying like next year, and maybe I still do it and just do it as a, you know, a random late thing. But that's like been my biggest pivot for everything right now.
It seems like in terms of personal development, you've really been developing your sense of, if I'm just inferring here, focus and commitment.
Yes.
Differently than before.
Yes.
It sounds like.
Yes.
And that trading is a part of that. I mean, you got to focus a lot. Like just the act of trading requires so much precision and focus. But then there's, it sounds like a meta focus that this serves your life in a big way.
Yeah, it actually comes from a phrase from a mentor that I don't want to repeat because he wasn't a very good person, but it's being your future self.
Yeah.
I don't know where he took that from, but it is like, do something today that your future self would be proud of. And if you keep adding those simple decisions, and that's like those little itty bitty decisions act in such a bigger way when you look, you know, when you look down the road of how all those little itty bitty decisions just added up, and it's like that snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something that you said a minute ago about how it's all in your head, you said. One of the things you've been a big proponent of and you got me doing, and I don't know if we ever really talked about it much, but was the journaling of your thoughts, like every morning, like having just like a almost like a puke. You puke everything out onto a piece of paper, all the things that are bothering you. And then I'd counterbalance that with like a gratitude list. I'd write down the things that I'm grateful for to kind of give some balance to it. But
like in your life in general, not just about trading, just everything.
Anything that's in your mind. But yeah, Mike was the one who got me started on that. I don't know if you want to kind of talk about how that's helped you or the things that you found with that.
I had to do that for sleep, frankly.
Mm.
That's where that stemmed from, really, was I do it for sleep. I, on my tablet before bed, is I will write down a whole bunch of things that are rattling through my mind, whether it doesn't matter what it is, frankly. It just, whatever is on my head of something that I need to do, need to think about, need to complete.
I do that too at 2 a.m. when I'm up and I can't sleep. It helps me get back to sleep. Like at least then I'm not looping those ideas. They're out and I can deal with it in the morning. Is it kind of like that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I really like to do them at night before I go to bed because it basically gives me a thought list or a task list for the next day. And actually makes it gratifying the following day of how many I knock off that list. And it gives you that
satisfaction.
It goes back to, you know, I actually like to go to Jocko. I don't know if you know familiar Jocko.
I don't think so. Twitter.
So Jocko Wilkins is a motivational speaker, is a former Navy SEAL. And a lot of his, you understand where the watch thing came from? It's from Jocko.
Gotcha.
Jocko Wilkins. And that's what I was emulating from was, but it's also about doing the hard things first. And it's basically that list is like, when I look at that list, do the thing that I hate doing the most first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Get it out of the way. And then the rest of it should be easier.
Well, it's that whole idea about the man that does the hard things and will have an easy life.
Yeah. Do hard things, have an easy life. Do easy things, have a hard life.
Yes. Yeah. It's also smart first thing in the morning if you're caffeinated, like just go for the thing, right? Use that caffeine to your advantage. I don't know if you do that or not, but that's how I would do it.
I'm not a morning person though. I have to do those things in the evening when I have energy.
I get up at 3:45 in the morning when my first alarm clock goes off, and typically I'm walking around 4 and I take 200 milligrams of caffeine and then go work out.
My goodness.
And I don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
Are you up so early because of your landscaping business or because of trading or some other reason?
I am actually by default 100% not a morning person. I am a morning person by trade.
Yeah. By landscape trade.
By landscaping, yes. Because as actually next week we start going to full tilt season, I will be in the office at 6:45 in the morning. Well, that's when the guys get in at 6:45. That means I'm in the office by 6 o'clock, which sucks because winter hours, that means I'm losing my hour extra of workout or my hour extra of watching my girls to get ready in the morning.
Gotcha.
And you do snow plowing in the winter. Is that right? That's part of your landscaping business, right? Like to keep it year round because you don't landscape in the winter. You do snow plowing. I heard you talking about that. I'm like, wow, that is burly stuff. And some nights you don't even sleep, it seems.
Yes. And that's actually where I find my groove, frankly. I am a 100% natural not owl. I can stay up all night. I'm very well adapted. I don't know if Air Force perfect was for that. Like when you're flying in C-130 or anything, like I can stay up very easily for 48, 72 hours very easily. But
you're very well suited for snow plowing then.
But you do have the snow hangover thereafter where you just are dead for, you know, I can do that very easily, but then the next few days I'm, you know, I can't do anything very good.
Yeah, really challenged.
I feel like when you pull from your sleep bank like that, when you do like the 3-day all-nighter things, like it just makes, it saps so much out of you that to do it again is even harder the next time.
Yeah, but it's amazing how easily I can do it.
Right.
My dad was always, you know, awestruck about how easily I could do that.
So on this, still on this train of like psychology, have you done any psychological work like therapies, or do you have practices? I mean, working out is, I know, a practice, but do you work on yourself to maintain that focus and commitment? Like, are there things that support you as a trader that are like kind of different levels of psychological work?
So I did, from a recommendation of my brother, do the BetterHelp for, I think it was a month, and I hated it. I actually, the therapist basically was telling me I'm not suicidal the whole entire time. And I was like,
wait,
I'm not suicidal?
The therapist was telling you were not suicidal?
Basically telling me I'm not suicidal, but talking about how suicidal all of her customers were. So don't go to BetterHelp if you're suicidal.
That is very
That's
bizarre.
Confusing. Better, okay.
Yeah,
doesn't sound
so
like very good help.
That did not work out very well.
No.
It really was a lot of just self-reflection. The thing that I found later towards the end of it was the Trident mindset that really helped a lot of my affirmations in my head, like that idea.
There's so much good stuff in that.
And then I actually changed my tune, which was kind of odd that I don't know many people do, but like when I'm working out now, you Google motivational gym on YouTube. That's what I'm listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I'll check it out.
It's basically every motivational speech you can think of, you know, from The Rock Johnson, from Kobe Bryant, from just every single person, motivational speaker you can think of. And many of them, I actually don't even know their names because they don't actually quote them correctly in the YouTube comments or in the YouTube thing, which is why so many of my quotes that I put on Twitter don't have the person quoted because the person on YouTube didn't quote it. So I don't know who said it.
You could just say MLK, you know,
I like know,
everybody
right?
who said everything.
Just make it up.
Exactly.
Or Gandhi.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, from Gandhi, from Benjamin Franklin, I mean, there are so many great quotes and there's so many great sayings that are from so many other people. Like, it's not original thoughts when I quote things like that. Some of them actually are original, but for the most part, it came from just listening to that mindset. And it's when I start my morning routine of working out, that's typically when I start posting stuff like that. But it's getting that mindset of, you know, rise and grind. Nothing's given to you. You know, you got to earn. You just got to earn it. You have to work what you want. You know, it's just no one's there to give it to you. Just.
I love this. So you're working out and listening to this essentially every day before trading.
Yep. I work out for roughly an hour and a half every morning, except for Sundays.
I'm getting tired just thinking about it.
I love this. I love this so much.
No, thank you. It doesn't work for me. I can do 15 minutes.
I mean, I'm a runner, so I like running to beats, you know, at 170 beats per minute. That's my speed. And so I have a hard time listening to talks. I've tried to listen to podcasts while I'm running and it just isn't as motivating. And I listen to like hip hop while I run and, you know, like ego boosting hip hop basically. But I love the general idea of having motivational talks to listen to. I don't know, maybe even while trading. Like that could be interesting. Have you done that?
I feel like that would be too much of a distraction.
Maybe too much of a distraction, but or just like around it. You don't think so? Have you done it?
Yes.
Music, I can understand, but I don't know. I would get too sucked into the conversation, I think. But maybe that's what you need. Maybe like a lot of times you need something to distract you from being stupid, or me at least.
My two favorite trading mixes basically right now is basically a motivational thing. And then there's also an instrumental where it's basically movie scores.
Nice.
But no lyrics. So I kind of switch back and forth between those two when I can for trading.
And so you've found success though, or that it's supportive to be listening to motivational talks while trading.
Yes.
I'm so excited about this.
I feel like it's, I was telling Kyle and Joel, was that I feel like what I'm trying to do basically is I've had so much negative talk going on in my head that I'm trying to reprogram my negative talk in my head. And I feel like the motivational speaking is part of that, you know, reformation or whatever, to try and talk to myself correctly. And I've actually even caught it in my daughters, you know, when they say, you know, I'm stupid, you know, trying to correct that. But it's amazing how cognizant I am now of when I'm talking shitty to myself.
I thank Rich for that. Mm-hmm. Rich really shined a light on.
I would agree.
How did you come about realizing that, actually? That's what I'm curious about. And is that having an impact?
It's having a humongous impact. How I came about it, just self-reflection. I mean, I don't have any magic way of how I did that. It was...
journaling, anything like that, like where you can kind of see it?
No, because really kind of like the journaling didn't evolve until after this. It was part of that midlife crisis and just... boiling down to what, like, I've always had like a chip on my shoulder. I've always had an anger inside. I've always had this issue, frankly. And I believe that issue just comes from where basically the last 20 years, at least, I am not living up to my expectations that I give to myself.
Are you the oldest?
No, I'm the middle.
You're the middle? Okay. Is that a middle kid syndrome thing?
I have no idea, but I am the middle child that has had more broken arms than you can count, and I've had more stitches than you can count, and none of my brothers were ever in emergency room except my little brother when I hit him with a croquet mallet and gave him stitches across his face.
Oh, my God.
So if there was one that was always in trouble, it was me.
You sound like my little brother. Fucking terrorist.
It was always, I won't do this, but Mike will do it. I was always the one proving a point. Yes.
Can we go back to the thing that you just referenced before that Rich said? Or there's something that Rich Friesen, right? You're talking about brought in about mindset or not talking to yourself in that way. I was curious about that, if you could say more, because I imagine some listeners know about that and some don't.
They've listened to anything with Rich Friesen in it that should be kind of apparent, because he is... maybe not the very first episode we ever did, but it was very frequent. Yeah. He would correct me and be like, why are you referring to yourself like that? Why are you being so negative? Or
it's rephrasing.
Reframing.
It. He would literally interrupt you and tell you to rephrase it, what you just said.
Can you say that in a different way, in a more positive way?
Yes.
Has that worked for you? Like, have you found that that's been an intervention that's been helpful?
100%.
Have you heard us say it? You've probably done it too. Have you heard us say it to Baba or Banks when they say, oh, absolutely. I traded like an idiot today? It's like, oh, no.
Totally.
No negative talk like that.
I love that. Is that where this culture of like positive talk, positive self-talk comes from? Is this Rich Friesen influence?
I believe so.
I would think so.
Great. I love it.
I think that's where it stemmed from for me.
He was the first person who ever introduced me to the idea that psychology had a place in trading. Because up until that point, I thought it was just... you just have to know what to do.
And here's the thing, though. Like, I still, even back then, I thought that crap was foo-foo.
It still seems foo-foo, but there's so much benefits that I've gotten out of it that I can't just brush it off anymore. Now, when somebody says something that sounds a little foo-foo, I'm like, you know what? I'll give it a try. Guided meditations? All right, let's see. Maybe there's something there. Maybe not, but at least be open-minded.
I can't do the meditation part yet, but I still get the self-talk part.
I like the guided meditations for falling asleep. They actually help put me to sleep.
Yes, I agree with that part. But as far as trying to meditate and just clear my mind, I can't. My mind's too damn busy.
Well, and that's actually, like, from what I understand or what I've learned about meditation, it's actually the point of meditation is not to clear your head, but it's to train your mind to interrupt thoughts that are coming and going that you don't want, and trying to focus on the thing that you actually want to focus on. So you focus on like your breathing, and as the thoughts come, you interrupt those thoughts and you go back to focusing on the breathing. It's training your mind to keep it from like taking over, I guess.
I like that frame for it. I've heard versions of that, but I like that of developing more mental discipline.
Yeah, I think that's more what it's about. Or at least that's the approach that I've been trying to give it, and makes me feel like I'm better at it now because I'm just the same way. Like, but I can't focus on my toes right now. Like my knee itches and I'm wondering about like what the cat's doing in the other room.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Great. I mean, we've kind of hit on so many things. Is there anything, Purdue, that you want to, like any wisdom that you want to impart to our listeners? You know, something about trading for people who are struggling.
Forget them. Do it for me.
Yeah, for us, actually.
Yeah.
I know. Actually, if I'm being honest, that's really, I'm like, ooh, Purdue's here in the room. What's he got for us? You know?
It's putting in the work. That's my way. It really is putting in the work. There's no one that's going to click the mouse for you. There's no one that is going to see the market the way you see it. And if you don't put in the work and work through your own process.
And what do you mean by that? Put in the work, like backtest or study different.
So for me, it's backtesting.
Yeah.
For me, it's backtesting. Mm-hmm. You can ask Kyle. I have backtested thousands and thousands of ideas and thousands of trades. It's really putting in that screen time. It's putting in that work, and you accelerate it by putting in backtests and working through that thesis, because in my opinion, you don't have a valid thesis unless you backtested it. And then when you put that valid thesis to actual real life market or forward testing it, you're going to have a different expectancy what happened in backtesting when you have real money on the line and real emotions. There are so many people out there on Twitter that are offering free content and free ideas. If you actually took the time and looked at their charts and looked at what they post and try and reverse engineer what they're thinking about, you shouldn't have to pay, you know, to try and get these ideas. These courses are just a bunch of crap. Don't waste your money. But like with Vanta Trading, you can find a niche group of people that are genuine, that don't give you a bunch of bullshit, that give you a general direction. But at the same point in time, like with Vanta and Bob and Banks, like they're going to give you some ideas and some things to work with, but that doesn't fix it.
Yeah.
You still have to take their ideas and their processes and put it to your own.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. And this is like, Kyle knows this more than anything. How guarded was I used to be, Kyle, about my process and my thinking?
Don't share this with anybody. This is just for you guys. Yeah.
Like really protected. You didn't want people to know. Yeah.
It was top secret. No one better know about this. I will kill you if you share those with anyone. Nowadays, I don't care. Because guess what? You're not going to see it the way I see it anymore.
Yeah. Was it because you shared some of those things with like Joel and me?
It wasn't just.
A lot of the setups that you shared with me, like I've turned into my own kind of thing, but they're based on your work, but they became like mine.
After but that I was put the point. The it wasn't just you. It was you and several other people that I've shared stuff with. And it's just comical how you think you can share someone like this is ABCD. Like this is it. Like if you just do this, make this. And how they still can't see the same exact thing you tried to teach them.
Even with the same exact strategy. Right. Totally.
Yes. Yes.
Totally. I love that you're bringing this up because trading does seem to have this culture of like proprietary, you know, strategies or something. Like we can't share and this is mine. And I really appreciate that you're bringing attention to this because, we could be looking at the same screen and trade it totally differently.
And that's why the market's the markets. Everyone sees it different.
Yeah.
The other thing about that too is that there's nothing new. You look at everything that's out there, like it's all been done before. Like Purdue, you turned us on to Wyckoff's book, like from like the 1920s. Yes. And this guy is talking about volume profile and auction market theory the same way that Dalton did in Markets and Profile.
That is one of my biggest rabbit hole rants, and I'm going to piss off all you ICT traders right now. Go Google Wyckoff and look up all of his books. The dude basically invented all of ICT. Someone changed the names and stuff. You know, your point of three is actually the same thing of Wyckoff, accumulation, manipulation, distribution. Like, It is comical. And this isn't a book that was written in the 1929s, and the dude did it by hand, by charting, and the change of character on all these things. Like, nothing's original. Everyone thinks they're original.
It's all regurgitated stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The point is, find something that resonates with you, or if you take an idea from somebody, spend 1,000 hours backtesting it and then learning the nuances of it for yourself, and you're going to see it completely different than they are. But
1,000 hours. Yeah. But
my biggest thing though is give credit to the person that you, I don't care if you think if this is your new widget, tell, yeah, hey, I learned this new widget from this person. Like, give at least the person that you learned the widget from and try and pretend like it's your own new widget. Like, I have no problem sharing, I learned this person's widget and I made this version of it.
Right. But it's based on this work.
You seem annoyed with a lot of the culture of people in trading.
Extremely annoyed by it because I feel like that's where all the predators lie.
Mm. Yeah.
You look at trading and you look at retail trading and the POS people that try to make their widget their own original thing and then sell it in a course to some dumb, uninformed person, those people are the lowest of lowest in the trading world, in my opinion. And I'm an actual personal example. I've been victim of many stupid trading courses that I wasted several $100,000 on it. When I say $100,000, but several hundred dollars on many courses that I just totally waste of time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think the only benefit for paying for education is that you at least are getting, if it's from someone who's reputable, then at least you know, because you don't know what you're looking for when you're first starting out. Like, I could see some benefit to that, but
I don't know.
You have to learn it for yourself too.
There's also value that I can see, like when I pay for something. I've had this in personal development work too, that like when I pay for something, I'm probably more invested in it, even if it's kind of faulty or something, I'm going to be paying more attention on some level. So I might get something even if it's not, but I get that there's lots of crap out there that's not worth it. But
so pay yourself then when you go to read something new.
I 100% do agree. There is 100% value in paying for something. So I'm backtracking and probably confusing people. Like, because if you create, let's just say, Vonta Trading, it's a free room. You're going to have a bunch of lowlifes just siphoning off of it just to scam people or just to get free content and not be personally invested. The paid part of it gives a personal investment of it.
Mm-hmm.
The lowbrow part that I have is when you got, you know, these other paid rooms that use their paid room and then upsell their existing clientele on a $1,000 course, which I've been sucker of, to learn the secrets of the mentor, you know, those type of stuff. Those are the, like, the scum of the earth, in my opinion.
It's like, what are we doing in the room? We're supposed to be in the room to learn the secrets of you.
Right. Are we not learning it here? Exactly.
Paying
show
$200
us.
A month to learn the secrets. Now you want $1,000? Yeah.
I get it. You just get to be a part of the room for, what is it, $200 a month just to watch him trade. And if you want to learn his secrets, you have to pay the $1,000 for the course.
Right.
I'm dead serious. I was in a room just like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of freaking scams out there.
Okay, my final question.
Okay.
All right.
What are we going to do about your anger coming out into your trading?
That's my million-dollar question.
Do you have those little squeeze balls at work?
I have a shooting range in my backyard of my office because that's another outlet.
Yeah, a different outlet.
Yes. No, I'm dead serious. I have a 22 with a silencer that I go shoot in my backyard in my office.
Right. So it seems like there needs to be an outlet.
There needs to be an outlet. But the problem is it's never a convenient outlet. Like, I can't always go shoot in the backyard if there's employees around. I can't go drive a car very fast. I can't get in a plane and go fast. You know, it's like that's what I need to work on. Absolutely, is working on different ways to channel outlet. the biggest part that I have found is recognizing when I'm at that point.
Yeah.
And I will admit, as bad as everyone will talk crap about the prop firms, it is 100% has helped me just financially, even as much as money as I spent on prop firms, as much money as I would ever invested in real money. Learning the prop firms game and learning their risk requirements. And then at the same point in time, like, for example, I shared with Kyle today, like I have 6 different accounts right now that I'm working. If I get to around $400 loss in one account, I stop it and move on to the next one. I don't copy trades anymore because I feel like every time I try to copy trades, I fumble something technology-wise and it blows them up. So I just basically rotate from one account to another. Oftentimes it's the same trade, but that's what has helped me a lot is just, you know, if this account doesn't do well, it's okay. I have this one. I just move on to this one. But yeah, it really is. My anger part of it is been condensed, is that I've been more structured in my trading. It's basically I allow myself from the open till 2 hours after the open is my trading window. That's really my structure right now as far as trying to control that part of it. The last thing about it is recognizing markets that I like. That's the biggest one. Normally, like today is actually an outlier. Normally today is like today, I actually would avoid it.
Oh yeah.
Because I hated, normally I hate any days where we have a big London gap up.
Right, right.
And run. But I was up at 3:45 in the morning and I got a lot of part of that gap up. So I already had some money to play with and was in a good mood and capitalized and just kept going with it.
It's funny how much mood can affect things too, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And just being up and looking at the charts and you know, seeing what's going on and getting a feel and getting that information, what was going on, that I felt like today was just going to be a continuation. Unless, and I had it on my chart, unless we take out the London mid, I was going to be long. So yeah. It's just, it really is that perception of, you know, knowing your place in the market and knowing you can't move the market and finding your places where you want to trade. I mean, that's like the most basic thing of a trader.
Yeah, and what you like.
Yeah.
And having awareness when you're pissed off.
It's all about awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is.
Spent thousands of hours learning that.
Right.
Yeah. And it will continue, I'm sure. So great. Well, I'm so grateful to finally get to, it feels like meeting you, actually, even though, you know, we've had some exchange here and there, but I'm grateful to get to meet you and have this conversation and know you more in all these ways. So thanks so much for joining us in this conversation.
I guess it is getting a little late, isn't it? A cat is losing its freaking mind outside my office too. If you enjoyed today's conversation, you're looking for more, please check out the guest directory. You can browse all the amazing people we've had the pleasure of speaking with in the past. Be sure to include all those links in the episode description. So click on them, goddammit. I'll be back soon with another exciting episode. But until then, hit that 5-star rating. Tell your friends so I can stop nagging everyone and have a great day. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.